Previously on the Audiophiles.
Billie Eilish's follow-up to her previous album, Happier Than Ever, could be arriving soon, as she revealed on Instagram. Can you think of anything funnier than a Billie Eilish album named Happier Than Ever? Because you know she's just a bubbling, go-getting kind of chick. What was I made for? I will say this, though, if we talk about Billie almost weekly, we've kind of helped out ourselves, because now people have become familiar with what we do. And at this moment, in this podcast, I promise you there are a number of people listening, and especially if a couple of people happen to be listening together simultaneously, one is turning to the other and saying,
what are you listening to?
They're going, the Audiophiles.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because they're bitching on Billie again.
Chins up, boobs out, it's showtime.
Time for music.
A civilized conversation.
Wherever the music takes me, kitten.
Scott Edward Phelps.
Ah, yes, the legendary wit, or at least half of it.
Dave Simmons.
Good evening, Dave.
Can we not talk about sex so much?
Tell you right out, I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to...
The most important music show ever.
Cue inspirational music.
The Audiophiles.
You know, when I was a boy, folks used to say to me, slow down, Dewey. Don't walk so hard. And I used to tell them, life's a race, and I'm in it to win it. And I walk as damn hard as I please. How do I walk, boys?
If not at the top of the list of all-time best fake songs, and certainly high up on the list of all-time best fake songs. And this week, we're going to offer our salute to a few of our favorite fakes, songs that were invented solely to be a part of a TV movie or TV show, and were often the best and most entertaining part of that TV show and or movie. Also, on this here episode, yes, all five will be performed during the ceremony, and boy, will that be a reason to hit pause and go get yourselves a snack. Dave's going to promote a minimum of five fine quality items eventually today, but that's okay, since I'm going to drop a minimum of at least five celebrity names. And speaking of salutes, for all you youngsters out there, the first in what we hope will become a tradition here on the show, our very first salute to Orgasms, set, of course, to music, because, you know, that's what we do. Two guys talking tunes. Orgasms, sure, but tunes for sure. But first up, get your TV remote pause finger in shape, kiddos, because there shall be five, count them, five reasons to hit it. It's this week's news at the top of the charts.
Yo! On the top of the charts.
The Audiophiles.
You know, it's like when we... Seasons change. Here we've been talking about, oh my gosh, you know, it's March.
Seasons change.
It's March. Oh my gosh, you know, our taxes, blah, blah. We're going to get that done next thing. You know, it'll be summer and then bang, Christmas again. And the year seems to roll around. You and I call those things mile markers in my life. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. But you and I kind of have evolved with the stuff that we do here. And I know there's two seasons in particular. One that we talk about a lot because we enjoy the repartee. The other one we kind of do out of inevitability. One of those is the Oscar nominations.
Yes.
And Grammy. And the other one, main one, is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I just do that to watch the Baines in your neck stand.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's really always fun to watch.
They stand up.
Well, the Oscar nominations, blah, blah, blah. The ceremony's coming up, I think, at the end of this week. And the Oscar producers have confirmed, and I know people have been hanging on the edge of their seats waiting to know whether or not. And you get your information here. All five nominees for Best Original Song will be performed at the ceremony. And I've got some good news and bad news. Well, the good news all depends on whether you give a shit about any of these nominations. The bad news is, put together a little melange for you so you can hear what you're talking about, or you can hear what you're voting for, or you can hear what you're not going to care for. This will be short and merciful, I promise. Starting off with, nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song, Jon Batiste. He's the guy that leads Stephen Colbert's band on the on the night show.
There you go.
Well, he's nominated for a song called It Never Went Away from the motion picture American Fiction.
It never went away. the feeling's just the same. Every time I see your face.
Second up on the nomination list, Scott George and the Osage Singers. It's Wajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajalajal Inevitably, Billy and Phineas are nominated from Barbie. What I was made for. Also from Barbie, and he's not the nominee per se, but he will be performing the song. Ryan Gosling sings a little I'm Just Ken from that Barbie flick.
I'm just Ken.
From the Who Really Cares, the movie's called Flamin' Hot. Becky G singing The Fire Inside. All right, snark alert. Snark alert. I'm just going to ask this rhetorical question and let it go because I know what the answer is. What the fuck ever happened to Moon River?
I don't know.
And Windmills of Your Mind and Help, The High and the Mighty.
Help, The Hard Day's Night. Yeah.
Was there anything, all due respect, first of all, we're not going to go
Raindrops keep falling on my head.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Written by Burt Bacharach. Written by Hal David. Burt Bacharach wrote, dun, 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 dun. We told that story.
That's right.
First of all, we don't have to go item by item here, but it occurred to me that kickoff, leadoff song there, John Batiste, he's a very talented kid, guy, whatever. Does a lot of great work on Colbert's show, and he's quite an accomplished artist on his own. But I swear, I was 30 seconds into listening to It Never Went Away, and all I could think of was Dana Carvey and Chopping Broccoli again.
Yes.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. The Indian thing, it's an Osage Singers Indian Tribe official.
I thought that was Paul Simon's new album.
Killers. That's what Garfunkel would like. Billy and Phineas, who cares?
It is what it is.
Ryan Gosling singing. I don't know who wrote I'm Just Ken. You never have seen the movie Barbie, have you? You're not
going
to see it.
No, and I'm going to make it a point not to see it. Yes.
I'm telling you, I know your predilections there. And I'm not giving you 5 stars and saying it's fucking Citizen Kane, but I will tell you this. I think it would surprise you. And I think you would respect and appreciate how well it's done for what it is. It's not what you think it is. That's all I'm going to say. But this, you know, it's, and Becky G, Fire Inside, Flamin' Hot, who cares, once again.
It's got to your typical Latin beat that's popular right now.
I reiterate, whatever happened to Moon
River. If you master that drum beat,
yeah,
you can go play an entire night with any Latin band in the country. Just saying.
This is what I'm talking about. So I think
I woke up on the wrong side of the bed today.
No, it's okay. Well, you know, it's a little crowded because I sleep over there all the time, but all I can think of is, the Latin beat when you're thinking last week when we played whatever that song was, we said we heard it. It was the music used in the Seinfeld episode where they were making the sausages and things. But this is like, they changed it years ago to, and the winner is to, and the Oscar goes to.
Right.
Because they don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But when you have this kind of selection, it's only right that you say the Oscar goes to, because winners, I'm sorry.
Nah.
All right, let's talk about some other new music in a different category. It's election year officially. Very sorry about that. And I'll tell you this, whatever else Dave Simmons and I are, by golly, we are...
Scott Edward Phelps, Dave Simmons.
Patriotic guys.
Yeah, I'm so patriotic, it just flows right out of me. You know who Aaron Lewis is, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do. Yes, okay. I do.
Aaron Lewis is the front man for a rock band called Stained.
Mm-hmm.
He's at number 11 on the All Genres chart on Billboards. He's number 4 on the iTunes Country chart, and the song is called Made in China. Somehow this one got past me. I hadn't heard this till this week. I listened to it. Well, it was released just a week ago.
I've always liked his voice.
I like his voice, too.
Damn.
Through a press release, he commented about this song. And said, quote, It climbed up and shined like a beacon from the hilltop, showing the truth still matters. In the pursuit of truth, I would consider this a victory, unquote. The song is made in China. Going to offer up something a little out of the ordinary. As you know, most of the time, 90% of the time, what we do is we excerpt the music we talk about. So otherwise we'd do like three songs a show. This is going to run a little longer than 60 seconds, and the whole song is like 4 minutes. It's not going to be the whole song because they repeat the bridge and the verse and all that. But I want you to hear, because it doesn't really work in the whole context unless you hear what we have offered you in the way of an excerpt. So give this a listen. This is not a put on, and I have done no editing except to take out an extraneous bridge and verse, or chorus rather. It's Aaron Lewis. It's number 4 on the iTunes country chart, and it's called Made in China.
I ain't made in China. From all the cheapest parts, I ain't one for driving them imported foreign cars. I'm more like American muscle from 1966. Yeah, I ain't made in China. I'm American as it gets. By Uyghur kid, pennies on the dollar. I'm made in the USA, says so on my collar. Tried and true, red, white, and blue. My roots run way too thick. Yeah, I ain't made in China, 'cause I'm American as it gets. Grapes over the caskets of the ones who don't come back. I'm a gun-toting and locked and loaded, God-fearing son of a bitch. Lord knows I ain't made in China. I'm American as it gets, red-blooded as they come. I'll die for being free. Proud of where I'm from. Foreign made or city raised, I'm proud to say I'm neither. And I ain't selling them any of mine. I ain't buying theirs either. If you got something to say about that, I couldn't give two shits. China, I'm American as it gets.
All right, now I would like to offer up this real quick. Because of the nature of his voice, which I love the sound of his voice, the record's well produced. It's an interesting, you know, sonically it's interesting, but there are some words that get a little bit lost in the translation there. So real quick, this is what you just heard lyrically. And again, I didn't edit this. I'm just reading it back to you so we're clear on this, because I want to offer an opinion here in a second. I ain't made in China from all the cheapest parts. I ain't one for driving them imported foreign cars. I'm more like American muscle from 1966. Yeah, I ain't made in China. I'm American as it gets. I ain't made by Uyghur kids. Uyghur is a cult, or not a cult. It's an ethnic group out of Turkey that are now in China. And that's a whole thing. For pennies on the dollar, I'm made in the USA. It says so on my collar. Tried and true, red, white, and blue. My roots run way too thick. Yeah, I ain't made in China, 'cause I'm American as it gets. And I'm hat over heart, doing my part to love the flag that drapes over the caskets of the ones who don't come back. I'm a gun-toting, locked and loaded, God-fearing son of a bitch. Lord knows I ain't in China. I'm American as it gets. Red-blooded as they come, I'll die for being free. I'm proud of where I'm from. Foreign-made or city-raised, I'm proud to say I'm neither. And I ain't selling them any of mine. I ain't buying theirs either. If you got something to say about that, I couldn't give two shits. 'Cause I ain't made in China. I'm American as it gets. I would like to have your opinion, but before you give me your opinion, Mm-hmm. May I just share something?
Share away.
I don't know about you, Dave, and I don't know about other folks listening to this right now, but I have to tell you, this affected me when I listened to it, and I listened to it several times. Because in the depth of my American heart and soul, this is how I feel about it. I can offer only one pure basic fact, truth for me. It's not 1824, you pandering shit pile of lynch mob patriotism. We've not only crossed the plains and tamed the prairie, we've crossed both oceans several times both ways, and we live in a fucking global world. And this kind of redneck hoorah horse shit that continues to drive wedges not only between each other here in our country, but also between us and other nations on the planet that we all share space on, whether you like it or not, you dumber than a fucking bag of rocks pea brain. Here endeth Raider Record. Holy shit, where's the Tylenol? How about you, Dave? What'd you think?
It's fine. Yeah, I don't have a problem with somebody writing how patriotic.
I don't mind patriotism. I said we're patriotic guys. That's yes. Not what this is. This is more of that shit of us versus them, you versus us. It's counterintuitive, it's counterproductive, and it's destructive. And it's just pandering to a brainiac, a dumbed-down attitude that we just have too fucking much of as it is.
Well, I mean, that's running rampant worldwide, but
I'm just saying.
You know, it's just one guy with a song that...
Oh, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna toss and turn tonight. I had to get that little bone out of my throat. I'll tell you what, Charlie Daniels is dead. But he's not spinning in his grave. His little hand is stuck up in a little American flag is going back and forth. And right below that is the Confederate flag right back and forth. I'm not looking for God Bless the USA because I think that's that kind of stuff. I'm looking for that's as pandering as to the other side as it can be. And I'm not looking for the Pollyanna bullshit because life is life and real is real. But, you know, come on, man. Where's the peace and love and groovy and, hey, we got to figure it out. And we are in the same damn boat. This is what these songs keep missing.
I think... there are a lot of people, especially in middle America, that a lot of Detroit, the city of Detroit's being bought up by Chinese businessmen and stuff. I mean, it depends. I don't know where he's from and his background, but if another country is over buying up your town, that could irk you. And I don't know his basis for it. You know, like I said, it's a song. I'm not
putting any more stock in it than that. But I'm, and I know because we've already got this going on. You know, it's March. The election, quote unquote, isn't until November. All we're going to get from here on out is more of this.
Oh yeah,
divide and conquer, divide and conquer, divide and conquer, divide and conquer. And it's like, shut the fuck up and give us something we can work with here.
Well, I'd like to. I mean, it would be nice to talk to him because remember. The North of Richmond song, your panties kind of got in a bunch before you understood what it was about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when he clarified what he was saying, you agreed with him.
Yeah. This is, you know, where's the line? The one that corked it for me.
The Wagyu Children?
No, because he says I ain't made in China. That's the core of the song.
Right.
He's basically saying that China shit. I'm a gun-toting, locked and loaded, God-fearing son of a bitch. Here we go.
Well, that's every redneck, dude. Come on.
And I'm not disputing that. What I'm saying is that's playing to the dumb-down, and the dumb-down isn't doing anybody any favors. And my favorite, there was a scene, I want to say it was West Wing, a long time ago. But it doesn't matter. It's a generic thing. Ask anybody, and especially those of this particular demographic who might be, yeah, me too, and you bitching. You know what I want to say to them? You ain't made in China, are you? No, God bless the USA. Where do you shop?
Yeah.
Shop at Walmart? Shop at Target? What do you drive?
Yeah.
A Hyundai. Well, then shut the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets under my skin.
Yeah, I don't fault anybody. It's an okay song. I don't like it or dislike it. It's kind of, I tell you what, I like it better than Billie Eilish. I'll be honest with you.
That's apples and Phineas. I don't mean nothing.
And as much as you don't like it, I think you like it better than Billie Eilish.
And now you know the secret of the show. We keep Dave around as the voice of reason.
Scott Edward Phelps, The Audiophiles.
I'm proud to be an old-fashioned patriot, and I'd destroy any enemy if it meant saving my country.
Maybe you should put some shorts on or something if you want to keep fighting evil today.
Nah, I'm kind of out of the mood now. Let's say, hey, Dave. Hey.
Dave Simmons.
Hey.
Dave. Hey.
What you got?
What's up?
All right, this week's fave fakes, songs invented and created whatever for whatever. And Dave's fave fakes, well, forget name that tune in three notes. We can all name that tune and that band in one fill. And that's the fill. Take a guess.
Well, if we're talking about fictitious bands, songs, the Monkees have to come up.
Well, they do, although it's...
They're the granddaddy, but very much like Pinocchio, the TV band became a real little boy. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So you if you put it into that context...
You've been thinking about this.
Yes, I have. But, you know...
And may I just... I don't want to lose your...
Oh, go ahead.
Don't lose your train of thought, but I just want to interject
right here. It's a slow train.
I'm proud of you because I'm telling you, We're talking eruditely and articulately about the Monkees, and it has nothing to do with the fact they can't get their fucking asses in the Hall of Fame to save their lives.
That is true. But the Monkees were the idea of Bob Rafelson and Bert Schneider, geniuses.
Right.
And they saw the Beatles' success and caught on and wanted an American counterpart.
Yep.
And, you know, after the Hard Day's Night movie.
Yep.
And basically... The TV show is kind of like A Hard Day's Night, you know what I mean? But it's about a band that can't make it.
Right.
They keep trying, but every time they try to get close to making it, they don't make it.
Well, the original concept, if memory serves, was they weren't even necessarily, they were looking for actors to play the Monkees.
Yes.
They weren't looking for musicians necessarily because it wasn't supposed to be a band.
Right.
It was guys pretending to be in a band, fictional band.
But it worked out better because two of them were accomplished musicians, Torque and Nesmith.
Yeah, and I would throw Davy Jones in there only because he was an established Broadway singer and Broadway vocalist.
And Mickey Dolenz had a band. He played guitar and sang in a little rock, Mickey and the All-Nighters.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. But
I was their roadie. Yes.
There you go. But looking at society, I was at a loss of words, sorry. On a society level, Vanity Fair had a really nice article, and they said the Monkees probably were the most influential band in the history of rock and roll. And if you look at it, if you step back and look at the broad picture,
yeah,
you have Nesmith basically creating MTV.
Okay.
Okay. Jimi Hendrix was introduced to America after the Monterey Pop Festival by going on tour with the Monkees. So it was like in Tina Turner, they brought them to a wider audience. Even Star Trek, the character Chekhov was made to counter Davy Jones. Gene Roddenberry.
Well, I'm not going to, yeah, you're, I agree
you
with
see,
you.
You see what I'm saying?
I agree with you in affection, but I'm not going to split the hairs with you because we could do a point counterpoint, Jane, you ignorant slut, where I would say that, yeah, but then if you take the tree back to the original root, that the Monkees were the Beatles, and so it all stemmed from there. And I always kind of flinch when I hear somebody, anybody, not you at this point, mm-hmm. or some article, somebody says, oh, these are the most important. That's like a list. It's subjective. And
it is very subjective.
But I will give you this, and you know where I stand with the Monkees. I mean, I almost got my ass kicked one time because I played I'm a Believer instead of Knock on Wood, and that was 1966. I was just 15 and I didn't need my ass kicked in those days. Their contribution to popular music has been woefully underrated and underappreciated.
Yes.
As much as it has been, okay, and the elusiveness of the idiocy that is Jan Wenner and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and everything. And there's still, it's just, it's one of those peculiar things. Why in the world MAGA is the whatever the hell it is and has become. The same thing with why in the world don't these guys get more credit for what they contributed. So.
Yeah. And then the other thing, the Moog was used first by the Monkees. The Moog synthesizer. I can't even
say
speak
that
to that.
Invented by Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Mickey Dolenz bought the third one. And then you think culturally, basically, Dennis Hopper lent himself to the movie Head so he could get some money from Rafelson and Schneider to do
Easy Rider.
Mm-hmm. You know, so that whole era of those directors, Scorsese, Coppola, all those guys was ushered in by what? Monkees money.
That's right.
So, and they were the first boy band. How many boy bands have there been since? They were the first manufactured
band
of boys.
I agree.
So when you're saying fake bands. I mean, they're the king. They're the Elvis Presley of the fake bands.
Well, they were fake bands in a fake show with a show within the show, and that was kind of the whole purpose of the fake things, because as you'll see in a minute when we do the other montages, this is the kind of thing where you see... here's one we didn't include, but as an example, this TV series that was on ABC for a few seasons back called Nashville.
Yes, I remember it.
Now, I lived in Nashville for 20 years, so I know from whence I speak. All those songs were written for the TV show, and those characters were theoretically kind of versions of Tammy Wynette, versions of Loretta Lynn, and the characters drawn on those inspirations. But all that music was written specifically for it, and this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Same thing with those songs were originally designed to be written for a band that didn't exist, that was a TV show about a band trying to make it big, and they decided not to use regular songs. They did their own material.
And then the producers decided they wanted to put them in concert because the Monkey Mania got so big.
Yeah.
So they had to learn how to be a band.
And they went out and sold, in 1 year, sold more, was it 66 or
67?
Where they sold more albums than either the Beatles or the Stones.
Yep, combined.
Oh, my gosh.
But the funny thing about all of that is, when they started to realize they had talent, they had ability, Mike Nesmith started bringing songs to Don Kirshner, and he brought a song to Don Kirshner, and he had Don Kirshner said, this doesn't sound like the Monkees. And he goes, I am the Monkees.
Well, and kids, you have to take this in context. Unless you're a certain age, you don't know who Don Kirshner was.
Yes.
But you can find him on YouTube, and he was the host of Don Kirshner's Rock Concert. And he was the fodder of many a Saturday Night Live sketch through the years.
And that was actually a great show.
It was. In its time.
I saw a lot of bands that I had, that introduced me to a lot of bands.
They're very dated now, and they get a lot of flack for that reason, but Shindig.
Yes.
On ABC, Hullabaloo on NBC, and Don Kirshner's Rock Concert, and the Midnight Special on Friday nights. All right. Speaking of Monkees, and I did this, I know Dave knows it, but I'm going to do it anyway. The best-selling Monkee single, well, it's one of three songs written for them by Neil Diamond, the other three being Little Bit Me, Little Bit You, Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow, and Love to Love, which wasn't a big single, but it was from what album was it from there, Monkey Boy?
Good Times.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And the best-selling, well, here's a 1 minute and 11 second collector's edition rarity you can only find here entitled Monkees, the ultimate Believer Mix.
I thought love was only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. A love was out to get me, that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams.
When I saw her face, now I'm a believer. Not a trick, a cloud in my mind. I'm in love. I'm a believer, I can believe her if I try.
It's a solid thing. Now I'm a believer. I'm down in my mind. Said I'm a believer. Yeah, 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 yeah. Said I'm a believer. Yeah.
I had the production staff put all that together as a little early late birthday present for Dave. There's the Monkees and
Ultimate
Diamond performing in concert.
Yes, I'm a believer.
In my head.
That's our encore every night.
Yeah.
And for this show's Friday night, we learned a little bit me, a little bit you.
See there?
Mm-hmm.
It's all good. It's all Monkees. It's all Neil Diamond. Well, let's press that one again.
Dave Simmons.
K-E-double-L-O-double-good.
The audio files.
Kellogg's best to you.
That's right, kids. They even sold cornflakes, and they did it good. All right, after all this fall-de-rall and my screaming and ranting and raving, it's time to calm down, get an NPR sort of attitude, and visit the Culture Corner. This actually has nothing to do with fake faves, and this is not fake music, but I thought it would be interesting for trivial purposes if you'd like to win some money in a trivial pursuit. The very first use, as my research has showed me, the very first use of music specifically written for a motion picture was 1908. It was a French film by Charles, directed by Charles Leberger and André Calmettes, adapted by Henri Lovedon, and it was called The Assassination of the Duke of Guise.
How do you say that in French?
You say La Mort du Duc de Guise, which is actually the death of, or it's also known as La Assassinate de Guise, or it's also known as...
Je m'appelle Claude.
Je découpe plow.
It was one of the first films to feature both an original film score, which was composed by Camille Saint-Saëns, and a screenplay by an eminent screenwriter. But Saint-Saëns, for all you
NTR...
That's
Vidal's great... grandfather.
There you go. An actual classical composer, and that's the, well, here's a little bit of the, this is a little piece from the film. I'm thinking Kill the Wabbit, but that's just. So Saint-Saëns kind of functioned as the first John Williams, because this, and the movie itself, the entire movie was only 15 minutes long, which was excruciating. It was kind of like a Martin Scorsese movie back in 1908.
Yeah,
it was like, when is this damn thing going to be over?
Because those shorts back then were, what, 8 minutes, 10 minutes, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Anyway, just thought you'd be interested. Also, for American fans of music and trivia, in 1932, the very first completely original score written specifically for a movie was for a movie long ago forgotten called Symphony of 6 Million, but the composer who composed the score was a dude named Max Steiner, who did a lot of the 1930s Universal, Heat Warner Brothers, Adventures of Robin Hood, blah, blah, blah. Do the Google. But his main claim to fame, wrote the entire score, including the long ago adored and iconic themes to Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow.
So now you know the rest of the story. Speaking of fave fakes, we said at the outset, songs that were invented for the purposes of a show within a show, in a TV show, or perhaps in a movie. Let's hear some of those.
I know I'm faking it, I'm not really faking it.
We've talked about this young lady. She's getting up there now. She's ever so gently. She's in her 30s now. How old is Miley now?
30, I'm not sure.
32, 33?
Alexa, how old is Miley Cyrus?
Miley Cyrus is 31 years old.
31.
31.
There you go. I had her in her 30s.
I'd have to trade her in if I was with her.
Well, you and Leonardo DiCaprio. The, you know how they say that in French.
Je m'appelle Claude.
Je découpe plow.
We talk about Miley all the time, and both Dave and I have the utmost respect for her as a singer, performer.
Super
She's got
talented.
Great chops. She's a talented
Good
kid.
Songwriter as well.
She really has come into her own after all the twerking nonsense. But many of the semi-old, semi-younger, I would say, depends on your age, may not know that she really got her start, quote-unquote. And let's be honest, her dad was Billy Ray Cyrus, still is. And he was pretty big in the 80s, so it was kind of, and her mother's Dolly, her godmother's Dolly Parton, so it didn't hurt that she had kind of an in to get in. But she had some game. She was 11 or 12 when she first starred in a Walt Disney Weekly Saturday feature sitcom called Hannah Montana, and the premise was very simple. She was Miley Stewart, I think was her fictional name, just your everyday schoolgirl, middle school age girl, with her side buddy. And then at night, she put on a blonde wig and went out and performed like Taylor Swiftish-like, went out as Hannah Montana, who was this teen idol. And this one song was written not only as a theme for the sitcom itself, but as a fake thing for this fake artist. And it, after all these years, it still rings pretty cool. Cute song. Cool song. She did it very well.
Catchy. She had a great voice at 11. You know what I mean?
You know what? And I used to watch those shows when they were first on. I don't know why I was up on Saturday mornings and it was early. And
I know why.
There was no creepiness involved. There was no, you know, they were little kids. And,
right
and
there, I certainly Grandpa. Wasn't telling.
No, you got me confused with your side of the family. I just, it's a measure, to be honest with you, it was a measure of how well they were done. I mean, yeah. they weren't Citizen Kane either, but they were well written. They were very positive. They had a very wholesome message for the kids, but they weaved it in and out of the plot. And here's some interesting momentary trivia for you. I already knew this, but I love showing off and pretending that I know everything anyway. Her sidekick, I can't remember the characters. Her name was Miley and Hannah. Okay.
Right.
And then her main buddy, her main BFF was a blonde girl, and I don't know the character's name, but the actress who played the part, same age, 12, 13, was an actress named Emily Osment. Now, Emily is the real life sister of Haley Joel Osment, who was the I See Dead People in The Sixth Sense and Sorted Others. And there's another Osment kid running around.
Donnie.
Not to be confused with Donnie Marie. There you go. And, you get a rim shot for that. The rim shot's back. So,
oh, thank you.
But I put it back in just for you. But here's some interesting trivia. You may or may not be aware, depending on how much of a nerd you are when it comes to this kind of stuff. I was a TV Guide geek when I was a kid, so I keep in no shit like this. You see, depending on whether you watch the show or not, but many people do, and it's quite well known, you see Emily Osment each and every week on a network television sitcom.
A current one?
Uh-huh. I'll give you a hint. It's in its last season now, headed towards what's supposed to be a big finale.
Blue Bloods?
It's a comedy.
Oh,
it's a comedy.
Sorry. Because I was going to say, I watched Blue Bloods. I didn't ever see that.
Well, you may not even watch the show.
What show is it?
It's the spinoff, 5 years in, which is about to end, the spinoff from Big Bang Theory called Young Sheldon.
Young Sheldon, yeah.
And in the storyline, Georgie, Sheldon's older brother, has knocked up this girl named Mandy, who's like 19, and Georgie's only 17 or 16. And the actress playing Mandy, who's now become Georgie's fiance, is Emily Osment.
Oh, wow.
From Hannah, Montana. So now you know the rest of the story.
So she's like 31 pretending to be 19?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it's called acting.
I'm acting.
I don't know about the pregnant part. I take no. I just stay the hell away from that. All right. Fake music, fake songs. This whole project was designed to be parody and tribute. We've talked about them before. No big secret. It's the Ruttles, invented by Neil Ennis, who was in a group called Bonzo Dog Band.
And Eric Idle
of Monty Python. Ricky Fattar was the guy who played George Harrison, and John Halsey played Barry Wom, who was the Ringo Starr figure. But you have to see, if you're a Beatle fan and you still haven't seen the Ruttles, trust us, find the movie's available somewhere. You can get it on DVD. Yeah. You can buy it on eBay. The mockumentary was called All You Need Is Cash.
Mm-hmm.
It is so absolutely on the money, perfect parody of the Beatles, but in a good, intelligent, fun, not stupid, ridiculing way. It takes them through all the phases when they were the Mop Tops, when they were the Psychedelics, when John married Yoko, only this time it's
John.
Paul McCartney was Dirk McQuickley. That's Eric Idle.
And Stig.
Stig O'Hara was George Harrison.
Yeah.
But but the John Lennon guy, which was Neil Ennis, and I can't remember what his name was, his character name was.
But Yoko was a Nazi.
Yoko was a Nazi. It's hilarious.
It's the best.
But here's the beauty of it. The classy work these guys did, Neil Ennis in particular, and co-writing with Eric Idle a lot of the time, they did what a lot of these movies and TV shows do. They created songs for the mockumentary. They did not do existing Beatles songs. They did not do songs that had already been written in the 1960s that sounded like Beatles songs. In the late 70s, which is when they did this in the first place, they sat down and they composed new songs that sounded like Beatles songs, and damned if they didn't nail it. Check a few of them out. They did two complete albums, and then there was a Beatles, a Ruddles. They've parodied everything, and to this day, they did the anthology. They still issue album covers in parody of what the Beatles did at the particular.
Well, you know, it's funny. It's Ron Nasty.
Ron Nasty was the
John Lennon. Ron, Dirk, Stig, and Barry.
Yeah. And the Nazi girlfriend. But really what impressed all of us who were around in the day when they first showed up, and again, the mockumentary is wonderfully done, is the quality of the songs. And if you noticed, if you have a chance, they're all available on YouTube. You can track them down.
And George Harrison loved it.
Oh, he absolutely did. He was a big, he was a close buddy of Eric Idle's Pythons anyway. But what Neil Innes' genius is, well, not only did he do Beatles songs that sounded like Beatles doing the songs, and it wasn't, and he didn't do a parody of I Want to Hold Your Hand and She Loves You, he found a way to combine I Want to Hold Your Hand and She Loves You into one song. And there's a lot of that going on. Hey, Diddle Diddle, Piggy in the Middle, Do a Poo Poo, which was obviously I Am the Walrus. It's just genius stuff. So
All You Need Is Cash was All You Need Is Love.
We recommend it with 5+ stars. There's that. This is a favorite of mine, and it's not like a super starling, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, but I've always been a fan of this dude ever since I saw him. He was one third of the original Spinal Tap, and they're doing a new film.
I saw that.
Later this year or next year.
The one thing I'm wondering is if they're going to bring back, the nanny, Fran Drescher if they brought back all the old people that are still alive.
That's probably the most preferable way to do it. Talking about Spinal Tap, talking about Christopher Guest, who was one of the players, the other two being Harry Shearer and Michael McKean. But Christopher Guest became a director after Spinal Tap, and he turned in a series of and produced a series of mockumentaries that you may or may not be aware of. And if you're not, you need to be, because they're just really funny, intelligent. One is called Best in Show. It's a mockumentary about the Westminster Dog Show. If you've seen those things on PBS, but it's hilarious. And Christopher Guest has a little repertory company that he kind of works with in all of his movies. It includes Michael McKean and Harry Shearer from Spinal Tap, Catherine O'Hara. Who else is in that bunch? Fred Willard. Some of these names don't mean anything to you necessarily, but if you look up Christopher Guest's films, look up Best in Show. For Your Consideration was one about Oscars and actors and stuff. And this one was, the basic premise was that this record company executive of many, many, many decades had passed away at like 80 or 90, but he was a pioneer in recording and producing acts in the folk music boom of the late 1950s, early 1960s.
I love Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Peter, Paul, and Mary. But even the more folky, goofy, like the folk trio, the Kingston Trio. So he put together this mockumentary about this guy passing away, and all those acts from back in the late 50s, early 60s were asked to get together and come to New York and do a tribute. And this was modern day, them reuniting, as it were. But again, like the Ruddles thing, like some of the other stuff we've talked about, all these songs were written at the time by Christopher Guest. Michael McKean and his wife, the actress Annette O'Toole, wrote several of the major songs from this thing. None of them were big super hit singles that you're going to immediately go, but the beauty of this thing is, and again, it's called A Mighty Wind. You can find, I've got the DVD with some added additional extras, and it's just really well done, funny, insightful, and this is a little mini montage of the songs. And keep in mind, they wrote these songs specifically for this film to make it sound like folk songs from the 50s and 60s. And they also performed these songs. For the most part, all of them were accomplished guitarists and bass players and singers in folk music. Check these guys out.
Tell me no, Mr. Blues, he's welcome here no more. Put on your happy shoes and chase him out the door.
My mama was the cold north wind. My daddy was the son of a railroad man from west of hell, where the trains don't even run.
Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon, gotta get her out of there.
Come on, boys, potatoes in the paddy wagon. Mama says it just ain't fair.
There's apple brandy by the keg
and sawdust on the floor.
So if you've got hankering, I'll tell you where to go.
Just look for the busted neon sign that flashes
E-A-O's.
Well, there's a puppy in the parlor and a skillet on the stove and a smelly old blanket that a Navajo wove. There's popcorn in the popper and a porker in the pot. There's pie in the pantry and the coffee's always hot. There's sausage in the morning and a party every night. There's a nurse on duty if you don't feel right. There's chicken on the table, but you gotta say grace. There's always something cooking at Old Joe's Place.
There's a kiss at the end of the rainbow, more precious than a pot of gold.
As I travel down the of this home I love so much.
Every carpenter and cowboy,
every lame man on a garage,
they're all talking about a feeling, about a taste that's in the air.
They're all talking about this mighty wind that's blowing everywhere. Oh, a mighty wind's a-blowing, it's kicking up the sand, it's blowing out a message to every woman, child and man. It's a mighty wind a-blowing from the land and across the sea. It's blowing peace and freedom, it's blowing equality. Yes, it's blowing peace and freedom, it's blowing you and me.
That's so good, so good.
And not for nothing, but the genius of that, if you happen to be really paying attention at the very last moment of that final song, which was the big finish song and the name of the film and all the rest of that, it's a peace and freedom and it's blowing equality. It's blowing peace and freedom. It's blowing you and me.
Yeah. The cool thing, and I think he got, Christopher Guest got this from Rob Reiner with the, you know, with the mockumentary style. If you're a musician and you watch these things, like when they're doing the reunion, all the same things that bothered you when you were in a band with them when you were
right.
young,
yeah,
come right back. Yeah. And it's just, it's so dead on. You know what I mean? Spinal Tap was so dead on if you played in a rock band.
Yep.
You know, and it's just like, it's phenomenal music, phenomenal writing.
That's the thing Christopher Guest has done with all of his mockumentaries is that it's that. They are like, yeah, it's taken to comedic levels, but it is exactly that.
It's on point.
In Best in Show, Fred Willard and another actor's got a British accent. They play the two guys who are hosting the TV coverage, and Fred Willard is the funny guy who's totally out of place and saying ridiculously stupid things,
right.
But they're funny and same thing. And this thing with the little slow number there, the kiss at the end of the rainbow, that's mm-hmm. the one that Michael McKean and his wife, Annette O'Toole, if you don't know who she is, you've seen her in lots of movies and TV through the years. Google her name and you'll go, oh yeah, I know her. She's cool. They wrote several of the songs for Mighty Wind. They wrote that song, Kiss at the End of the Rainbow. And the premise within the story is that's a duo named Mitch and Mickey. And it was a male female, unmarried, who were this big success in the late 50s, early 60s. That's Eugene Levy and from Schitt's Creek
mm-hmm.
and Catherine O'Hara. And the premise was in that song when they originally did it in the late 1950s, when it came to that point in the song was like the climax. At the end of rainbow, and there's a long pause, and he leans down and he kisses her. And that's how they did it originally when the 50s and 60s. Well, fast forward to the time when the movie's taking place. Mitch has become this drugged out psycho kind of Alzheimer's meets all kinds of weird goofy kind of shit, and this whole premise is he going to kiss her or not? It's just charming as all giddy up.
It's awesome.
Can't recommend this any higher.
It's awesome. But I think with Spinal Tap, I think Rob Reiner wrote the playbook, and they are kind of following it.
Yep,
which is awesome.
Yeah, it's all part of that club. So. And as far as we're not doing this in terms of importance, but you know, for my money, there has not been and this isn't exactly a mockumentary. It's a fictional story it's about a band, a little garage band in the 1960s. And they're troubled, tortured songwriter writes this song that's kind of a Roy Orbison-esque ballad. And they have to use a temporary drummer who speeds it up three times faster than it needs to be. And it becomes a big hit. And it's Tom Hanks' movie called That Thing You Do. Same story. Takes place in 1964. All of the songs in the movie were written for the movie, for the period. They're not from the period. and redone versions of the songs. They're brand new original material, and they're just good.
You're my girl and I'm your guy. You got me all tied up in knots, and I'm loving you lots and lots. I'm just loving you lots and lots. I'm loving you lots and lots.
For the man with the badge in the night.
Ladies and gentlemen, the O'Neaters. You can't miss. And the movie's just more fun than the Wall-E.
Adam Schlesinger, rest in peace.
The premise, and I remember hearing an interview years ago, because this movie now is like 20 plus years old. Tom Hanks said that the criteria when he got together with Adam Schlesinger was they said, well, how do you want to do this? And they talked about some. But as far as the Wonders were concerned, and especially as far as the theme song, That Thing You Do, was concerned, he said, well, I've got a unique task for you. He says, what we need is we need a song that sounds like the period, Beatlesque, right. British Invasion, all that. But more importantly, it's got to be a song that's kind of sounds like it would be a hit. But even more importantly than that, and this is going to be the tough part for you, it's got to be a song that won't make us all sick after listening to it for 7 months of photography and pre-production and post-production and all that. And sure enough, the guy did a marvelous job of putting
music together. At that point in time, I'm going to circle back to an earlier part of the show, he was working with the Monkees.
Yeah.
He produced Good Times.
Yeah.
And he wrote some period songs for the Monkees.
You Bring the Summer? Was that?
No,
was that
no.
That? No, you, that was from Whatchamadoo.
The dude.
Never mind.
Yeah. No, he wrote, if I pull that up, I can tell you.
We'll be right back.
But I'll bring it up later. But we, but
or people can look it up on their own.
Yeah, listening to the Good Times album, it feels a lot like That Thing You Do.
Yeah,
you know, because he wrote it sounds like a song from the 60s.
Yeah, but it's a well acted. And a lot of you may not know the actors by name, but when you see them in the movie, you go, oh yeah, I know those guys. And then that guy does this, and that guy does that, and then they're all really good. And it's Tom Hanks is in it. He plays the guy who manages them for the record label. So check it out.
And unfortunately, he passed away from COVID during the
Schlesinger, not Tom Hanks.
No, not Tom Hanks.
Well, you know how these things get started.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Dave Simmons, Scott Edward Phelps, The Audiophiles.
All right. I haven't nearly dropped enough names and figured out how to connect for one more fake face. Watch how I pull this off as we do 6 degrees.
6 degrees of SEP.
Buddy Cannon was the co-director of Mel Tillis' publishing company in the very early 1980s, and was one of the first people I ever met who was an actual pro professional producer songwriter in Nashville. He played bass in Mel Tillis' band. He and Jimmy Darrell ran the company, and they published the very first song that I ever got published, called Louisiana Lonely. But Buddy went on to a lucrative and successful career in Nashville producing such country successes as George Strait, Kenny Chesney. In the recent years, he's still at it. In recent years, he just either got nominated for or won himself another Grammy for being the producer on an album done by, I think, album number 793 or something by Willie Nelson. He also recorded and produced with Willie and the great Willie Nelson Merle Haggard album that was done a few years before Merle passed away. Anyway, Buddy, working with Willie Nelson, hand in glove at the board. Willie Nelson's son, Lucas Nelson, has a group called Promise of the Real. That band, including Lucas Nelson, son of Willie Nelson, who knew Buddy Cannon, who knows him, and I know him. See, I'm doing this. Was the band, my Promise of the Real, was the band behind Bradley Cooper's character in the movie that arguably made Lady Gaga a fully official movie star, A Star is Born from a few years ago. And while the song hit number one on the charts, it won an Oscar, there are those that still don't really grasp the concept that it was written fake. It was written as a song to be written by this aspiring songwriter played by Lady Gaga, and it became a big hit. Climbed the charts is exactly what it did, although it wasn't intended for that. It was just supposed to be part of the movie. And it's not a particularly deep song, wink, wink. In fact, as massive hits go, it's irrefutably sha-la-la-la-la-la. Heck of a song.
Yes.
Heck of a production song. And presentation. And
great
Bradley song. Cooper, that guy's got game.
He can sing.
You ought to see. You haven't seen Maestro, I imagine, the Bernstein
no.
film yet.
No.
He has, for all the crap he's taken for all the things that went on in that, too. He's a really talented guy.
All right. It's a shame that the very first person they wanted to play in The Star is Born never got to do it. Elvis.
Well, that was Tom.
Yep.
Colonel Tom. Always fucking things up, Colonel Tom. Yeah, da, da, da. All right, time for this week's dedication.
This is my dedication. Today we salute you.
This is my dedication.
Looks like muskrat love.
All right, we haven't done anything really creepy for a while. With the exception of me watching Hannah Montana, but I still stand by the fact that I watched the show because it was pleasant and the music was good and the girls were very comedically charming. It had absolutely nothing to do with the fact that I was a 50-year-old man watching a show about 12-year-old girls.
In his underwear.
No, I had my jammy bottoms on, at least. But I thought about you when I saw this story, and I said, you know, we haven't done a good musical salute to orgasm in a while, so here you go. A University of Texas at Austin study has observed the brains of rodents during and after orgasm. And wouldn't you like to have that job? How do you?
Has it come yet? No.
And found that regions that shape bonding were active. And the contention is if humans experience similar brain activity, this means intimacy strengthens bonds. But here's the kicker, because that's kind of a duh. Intimacy strengthens bonds. Of course it does.
Unless you're paying by the hour.
That's exactly right. And that's not intimacy. That's transactional.
Well, yeah, business, yeah.
There you go. Even if it is Saturday
but
morning.
But don't you're write a check.
That's right. Or watch the Disney
Channel. Don't write a check.
That's right. It's the stupid, see? It's the stupid shit. Not that he pulls that stuff. It's the stupid shit. Shockingly, there appeared to be no difference with the rodents depending on the sex of the rodent. Stephen Phelps, a professor at the university, no relation, thank you. He said this was a surprise. The prevailing hypothesis was that brain activity during mating and bonding would be different between the sexes. Okay.
Oh.
In the course of the study, they used 200 prairie voles, V-O-L-E-S. You know what a
yes.
vole is?
Yes.
There you go. I looked it up. It's a cross between a hamster and a lemming. But according to Wiki, but with a sturdier body. Think Kim Kardashian's ass. That's, you know.
It's sturdy.
In the study, they're a monogamous species. So there's that. But then I found this right behind it, this other story that just tied in marvelously and qualifies for the world of getting high and getting off at the same time. Four states, count them four, Ohio, Illinois, Connecticut, and New Mexico, where they really like to swing like the foxes, they are considering allowing female orgasmic disorder. Didn't they open for Stained a long time ago?
Yeah, I think they co-wrote that song, Made in China.
Made in China. Fucking song. Female orgasmic disorder. The states are allowing it to be on the list of qualifying conditions to use medical marijuana.
I think I have that.
Marijuana or female orgasmic disorder.
Female orgasmic disorder. Well,
I don't want to know about it. I don't want to do the research to find out about it. Suzanne Mulvihill is a sexologist, and she says research from as far back as the 70s.
Mulvihill.
Does that name ring a bell?
The jokes right themselves.
Mulva.
This is like an
now, see, this Seinfeld. Is where, this is what makes you and I compatible and different. You thought immediately Seinfeld and Mulva.
Uh-huh.
I thought Claude Mulvihill, the big burly detective who smacked Jack Nicholson around in Chinatown, in the very beginning of Chinatown. Never crossed my mind that it was the...
See, when I think of Mulvas and Vulvas, I don't ever think of big hairy detectives. I'm sorry.
That's because you didn't watch enough Disney Channel when you were 50. Anyway, supposedly weed can help women achieve the big O. Women with FOD, of course, now it has to have its own acronym.
Oh, well, you know.
Also tend to have more issues with anxiety, depression, and PTSD. Well, duh.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about pleasure, Mulvihill says. It's about a human right. It's a medical condition that deserves medical treatment, by God. So this week's, because this is this week's dedication, we're going to dedicate this going out to all who may concern. We put together a quality 41-second audiophiles salute. To orgasm.
Come on, I'm inside out with love, cause Julie's come again.
Easy come, and easy go.
Someday my prince will come.
I want your woman that's gone.
Come rain or come shine.
Go, come, go, come, go, come,
go, come.
Oh, you all come when you can.
And I think that speaks for itself.
Oh. You're listening to Scott Edward Phelps.
Oh, God.
Dave Simmons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
The Audiophiles.
Oh.
I'll have what she's having.
Ordinarily, well, you know what? We'll do this much.
And now.
And now.
And now.
So how long is this going to take?
2 minutes.
Ordinarily, I'd give you 2 minutes of an excerpt from the first episode of I've Never Heard of You Either that is now available for your delectation at Podomatic, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, all the same in places that you would get this particular podcast, and the sister connected podcast to this one that we now call the Audiophile.
Files. I was yawning. Sorry.
That's okay. You could have laid back, and I would have driven away.
I'm on it.
But we run a little over time, what with the orgasms and all. So I'm not going to play the excerpt.
And my FOD.
Just suffice to say that it's available there for you. And there will actually be another one on Friday. New episodes each Friday. It's called I've Never Heard of You Either. It's my memoir set to music. And that's all the plug I got. Let's say bye bye.
And now the moment you've all. Waiting for.
Can you move it out of here?
Okay, wrap it up, kid.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Audiophiles.
Bye-bye.
And I'll just lean back while Dave takes care of business.
No, this will be very quick.
That's what she said.
This Friday night, the Smyrna Opera House, Ultimate Diamond, there, I think they issued a low ticket alert last week. There may be tickets left. I don't know. Call the box office. And I want to thank Robbie Rodriguez and Lynn Rodriguez from Trinity Cymbals. They're getting me a lot of opportunities. Sam and...
See, now, because we went down this prurient track earlier today, everything has a dirty connotation to it.
It does. Sam and Kevin, thanks. HHG Drums, you guys make the best drums on the market. Iowa, Solo Beat. Hello, Indonesia. Our big fan base in Indonesia. Best drumsticks on the market. You can get the Dave Simmons signature sticks available online at solobeat.com for, I don't know what the price is, but they come in 9 colors. Earl Teague Music, Dean and Dale. You guys are like brothers to me. Thank you so much for all you do. Shop online. Your life may depend on it. And Nia That's Cox. Right.
Come by and
yes,
see Dale.
Come by. Nia Cox. From Excess Energy Drinks. Thank you so much, Nia Cox. I appreciate you so much.
Well, Dave just lost that endorsement. Okay. All right.
I tell you what. When you were 50, you watching Hannah Montana, and we've come to this.
You know, it's your fault, but up until this time, and God bless, and I apologize for this. What's her first name again?
Hannah?
No, not.
No, oh, Nia.
Nia.
Yeah.
Nia, I apologize, and I'm sure you've heard this crap all your life, but since we're in this ballpark right now, let me just tell you, it wasn't until this moment, thanks to Dave's brainwaves, that I made the connection between between Cox and energy drinks. I'm just saying.
It is what it is.
Okay.
But Nia is amazing.
I'm sure.
I just got another case. So Nia is amazing.
A case of
what? A case of energy drinks.
Penicillin will clear it right up. See, we could go all day with this. You know, you were asking for a little more Jackass style quality in the program.
That's what you get.
Yeah, be careful what you ask for. Anything else?
Nothing
else. Done all the damage we can do.
We've gone down roads we shouldn't have gone down.
Next week, everything will be greens, kind of, sort of. I think it's the St. Patrick's Day salute. We'll see how it works out or what kind of mood that we're in when we get ready to do it. In the meantime, that's about it.
That's all.
Well, that's way more than enough. I'm Scott Edward Phelps.
I'm Dave Simmons.
And remember, y'all come and see us when you can.
By and by, y'all come. Well, you all come see us now and then. Y'all come. Well, you all come see us when you can.
The Audio Files is produced in the United States of America. Questions, comments, and witty banter welcome. audiofilesbroadcast@gmail.com.
Y'all come.
Audio Files.